Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. We have an outstanding show tonight as we go into the musical world, and everyone knows how much I love music and the musicians that create the background of our world. Joining us in just a little bit, creator of the Philly Soul Sound, Grammy Award winner, member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we are so honored to have tonight, joining us from his home in New Jersey, Leon Huff is going to be here, and I'll tell you what, this is going to be a fantastic show, and we can't wait to talk to Leon Huff because it's going to be a great program tonight. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, Melissa Hovey is our studio producer, and Wayne Larson, our technical engineer. Music, as always, put together so great by Jim Johnson. And from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and somewhat humble Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. Well, I know the kids are about to go on vacation, Christmas holiday. Have you been pretty busy with your animal shows?
Yeah, in fact, tomorrow morning we'll be getting up bright and early. We're heading off to the area known as Waverly, Indiana, to see the young people with the animals, and also Martinsville, Indiana. So the baboon and exotic cats and everything's ready to go, so we're excited about that. And then next week, of course, we'll get ready for Santa Claus, and I want to tell everyone kind of a preview of next week's show on the 23rd. Laura Cheadle will be on the program bringing some fantastic Christmas music as we have a Laura Cheadle Christmas here on Larry Batson.
Well, we love Laura, too. She is wonderful.
Oh, she's absolutely fantastic. So we'll be looking forward to that and hearing some of her great sounds. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.LarryTheAnimalGuy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North 600 West Greencastle, Indiana 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for December 15th. Now, we've got a couple of confusing stories tonight, and we're going to start out with one of them.
Great.
Mr. Batson, did you count your bears today?
Did I what? Count my bears?
Count your bears.
Yes, I did. There's still two out there.
There's still two out there. Good. Uh-huh. Well, we're heading off to Billings, Montana. Now, wildlife biologists say that reports of grizzly bears are increasing in Montana's Beartooth Front. But it's difficult to tell if there are more bears or just more bear sightings. You get where I'm going?
Yeah.
Now,
I am.
Barb Pittman, wildlife biologist with the Beartooth Ranger District in Red Lodge there, says it's not clear if there are simply more people exploring the bear country or if there are more bears.
That's an interesting idea.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, a little confusing.
Well, they don't have to worry because it's probably cold enough now. The bears have gone under for the winter, though people that listen to our program know that bears truly do not hibernate. They just don't like snow and cold weather. So,
yeah, like me and you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, the annual eagle count in Trenton, New Jersey, has found 113 nesting pairs that produced 119 fledgling eagles. records, according to the State Division of Fish and Wildlife. Now, the Delaware Bay remains the eagle's stronghold in the state, boasting the highest state concentration along the more recent Cohansie Rivers there.
Fantastic news.
So if the eagles are doing good, the other wildlife is doing good also.
Well, that's
as
true.
Well.
Yeah, they're kind of a barometer for the wild world, that's for sure.
That's for sure. All right, well, if you live in Honolulu, Hawaii, now it's time. Five boa constrictors and two lizards have been turned over to the Humane Society under the state's illegal animal amnesty program. This is what we're talking about. If you have illegal animals, it's time to turn them in, and you won't get into any trouble for them.
Oh, in Hawaii.
Right. Right. Now, snakes are illegal there because they have no natural predators, and if they would get loose, then they'll threaten Hawaii's environment, which is pretty delicate anyway.
That's right.
So it's time. If you want to do it now. All right. Now, do you remember last week we reported on the story about the loon that mistook a highway as a body of water?
Yeah. How's it doing?
Well, it's doing fine, but unfortunately it's happened again.
Oh, no.
St. George, Utah. Thousands of migrating birds made crash landings after apparently mistaking a Walmart parking lot and other areas as bodies of water.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, now you could see how that could happen.
Yes.
Now, Teresa Griffin of the State Department of Wildlife Resources said workers have been picking up dead or injured birds. Now, they think that the storm clouds above the city lights probably confused the grebes. And you know what a grebe is. It's
yes.
Kind of a duck-like aquatic bird.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on their winter migration. So they were just passing over, thought it was a lake, and ended up at Walmart.
You know, excuse me, but I choked on that story. We see seagulls at our at our Walmart, and we're so inland, it's unbelievable, so... I've seen that, too, so.
Yeah, I'm from Kansas, as you know, and I was in Leavenworth, Kansas, visiting some family, and I looked up, and over Leavenworth, I saw pelicans.
Really?
Now, we're in Kansas, right?
Yeah.
As far away from any giant body of water that you can get, and but still, there are pelicans there.
I'll be. That's...
All right, now here's our second confusing story of the night.
Oh,
if you live in Casper, Wyoming, and you plan on doing any trout fishing here in the near future, be prepared. Now, state fishing regulations begin in January. Now, anglers will generally be allowed to keep 6 trout of any size in the lakes and rivers around the state, but can only keep 3 trout from a river or stream, with only one of the trout being over 16 inches. Now, if you're fishing for brook trout, anglers can keep 16 of any size.
Well, yes, they don't grow that. They don't get that large.
But
that's interesting. That is confusing, though.
Yeah, very confusing. So before you get in any trouble, check out your regulations and... All right, now, before you head off to your local park to feed the ducks, listen to this story. We're going to Lynn, Massachusetts. Claire Butcher, 80 years old, who in 2009 was banned from the city parks, was criminally charged with violating the no trespass order because she refuses to stop feeding the ducks and geese.
Oh.
You know, that litter the area there with waste. Mm. Now, Butcher brings shopping carts of bread to feed the birds at Black's Pond there. Yes, shopping carts. Now, here's the kicker. Maximum punishment, $100 fine or 30 days in jail.
Oh, what did she choose? Did it say?
She's 90 years old, so.
Oh, yeah. 30.
So she probably took both.
Yeah, probably.
All right, Larry, you were wondering if there is a Santa Claus. Well, apparently there is. Gulfport, Mississippi. An anonymous donor will cover the cost of adoptions at the Humane Society of South Mississippi Animal Shelter.
Well.
Now, just this last Monday, the shelter was damaged by fire. Now, there were 245 animals housed there, but none of them were seriously hurt. Now, the donor will pick up the $50 to $100 cost per animal for about 170 of the animals that are up for adoption there.
God bless them, whoever it may be. Wow, that's a great story.
That God bless them, you're right.
Absolutely.
Now, how are we doing on time tonight? Oh, we're not doing too bad. Now, we have a choice tonight. It's your choice. Do you want to hear about Rosie, a miniature horse, or do you want to hear about rabid skunks?
Let's go with the horse.
All right. Edmond, Oklahoma. Rosie, a miniature horse used as a therapy animal for an Edmonton boy with a form of autism, now can legally stay at the family's home. The family acquired the horse after about 6 months ago, and after a neighbor complained that it's violating a city ordinance that horses can only be kept on lots like 30,000 square feet or larger.
Mm.
So, Rosie, the miniature horse, gets to stay.
Great.
All right, now, want to let everybody know that we're on the end of the Geminid meteor showers tonight. Last night was the peak night, estimated around 75 an hour. But if you step out after it gets dark enough tonight, you can see a few of them babies still streaming across the sky.
Really? Well, I'll do that after our program.
I want to take a moment and say we lost a great last week. Dolby Gray passed away.
Oh, I'd heard about that. That is sad.
Yeah, I wanted to say have a moment for Dolby. All right, our fact of the day. After this fact of the day, a lot of our viewers are going to be looking for a duck. Now, a duck can't walk without bobbing its head.
So that's your fact?
That's the Wild World News for December 15th.
As always, an admirable job by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters. We want to tell everybody to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, RadioMom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, each Sunday at RadioMom.fm, where I play tons of music that has been inspired and created and written and produced by Leon Huff. That's on RadioMom.fm. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. Folks, a great time to go. It's God's country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
They do. They shout it in your face.
All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers.
Backstabbers. They shout it in your face.
All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers.
Backstabbers.
All you fellas who have someone and you really care. Yeah. Yeah. Then it's all.
Our guest tonight, created, written, produced, gosh, what a pleasure to have him on the show, along with his partner Kenny Gamble. They produced the Soul Sound out of Philadelphia. Our guest tonight, all the way from his home in New Jersey, member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Grammy Award winning artist, Leon Huff. Good evening, Mr. Huff.
This is Larry, right?
That's right.
Yeah, hello, Larry. That music sounded really, really great.
Man, wow. it gave me cold chills.
Backstabbers.
I know. Gosh, I bet that just brings back so many memories hearing those songs again.
Wow. But you know what's really a wonderful cover when Elvis did Only the Strong Survive. I'm still on cloud nine when Elvis did that song. And that was a highlight for Elvis to sing a Gambling Up song.
You know, that would have to be because, I mean, he was just such a supreme artist. Did you ever have a chance to talk to him about how impressed you were with his
session? Oh, gosh. We tried to get to go to the session, but Colonel Parker said it was a closed session, but I would have loved to go to that session and see that. That would have been a thrill of a lifetime. But I always respected Elvis as a great singer. Elvis could sing.
I
love Elvis. He was a very talented person. You know, all his movies. I loved Elvis. Elvis was he was legit.
He was, and he was so real. I mean, even as big a star as he was, when he sang. You know, we always, when we watch artists perform, we say, well, they've left. You can tell when they've gone into that zone.
Elvis was great. And Billy Paul, Me and Mrs. Jones, wow.
Oh, my Lord.
You know, what a song that was.
I told you before we were on the air that I do an FM show on Sundays, the 70s on Sunday at radiomom.fm. And I love playing that song because for a disc jockey, you have such a great lead in for that song. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you hear it now, it hasn't aged at all.
Oh, no, it still sounds great. In fact, I heard it the other day. But you played a couple of records in that collage that really took me back. I really got a chill when I heard the Ronettes, Baby, I Love You.
Oh, I requested that.
Oh, I played on that record, Larry.
I know. You're a pianist and you play the organ. Tell us about that
session.
Yeah,
I played on that. Oh, my God. I haven't heard that. Oh, boy. I remember that session with Phil Spector and the boy from New York City with Lieber and Stoller. Boy, they were the highlights of my musician career because I always had dreams of becoming a studio musician when I was a teenager. And that dream came true when I connected with the production company that recorded in New York, and that's how I got to know Jeff Barry, Ellie Greenwich, and Neil Sedaka. I was like, wow, I was in the middle of those New York songwriters and producers.
It's what did it sound like? I was thinking about this earlier today when I was thinking about our chat tonight. When you're in the Phil Spector, of course, he was known for that wall of sound. What did that sound like live in the studio?
Larry, I remember when Jeff Barry, very dear friend of mine, he called me to come to New York, and I caught the Trailway bus up from Camden, New Jersey, and I was excited because I knew who Phil Spector was, and I never dreamed about I would ever be playing on one of his sessions. So here I am in the studio with the arranger, Jack Nitzsche, the late Jack Nitzsche, great arranger, and Artie Butler, another great arranger, a musician, piano player, and that room was full of musicians. And we also had Sonny Bono and Cher was in the studio too, shaking tambourine. So it was
wow.
a wonderful, wonderful session. It was beyond my wildest dreams, really. I was so nervous when I sit down at the piano. But once I got the groove in, I mean, Phil Spector's session was swinging. Actually, it was three piano players playing the same part.
What did that sound like? I bet that was just, like, breathtaking.
Well, when I first walked into the studio, I seen these three pianos right in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what it was, too, you know. But Ellie Greenwich played one, I played one in the middle, and Artie Butler was playing the other one. But once I got the groove in, Larry, I mean, I was playing a lot of parts, and so I end up playing a lot of the parts myself, especially on the ending.
Was he?
But that was a thrill of a lifetime for me to ever say that I recorded in the studio with Phil Spector. That's an honor for me.
Was he experimental, or did he let you? Did you strictly go with the arrangements, or did he play around a little bit to try
yeah.
different things?
Well, yeah, he was experimental too, but he also had everything planned out on the, as far as the chords and the structure of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was, he started out with, he told all the rest of the orchestra to take a break while he worked with the drums. He must have worked with the drums for about 45 minutes before he called the musicians back in the studio. So he was, like, really into what he was striving for as far as sound was concerned, because those drums would be booming. And Hal Blaine and Gary Chester, all those great drummers during that time, they were playing all those sessions in New York. That was definitely a highlight for me.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Let's go back a little bit. I mean, well, maybe it's not back so much.
Okay.
To The Flame, the club in Philadelphia. Do you remember
okay, that again?
The Flame, the
what?
Club in Philadelphia?
The Flame?
Mm-hmm.
A club?
Yeah.
No.
Because
no,
I was...
I don't,
I'd heard about
it. Where was it located?
A lot of the... I'm not sure the exact location. A lot of the artists performed there. I was wondering if that was one of your places to find talent. How did you find your talent?
Well, actually, the clubs that I hung out in,
mm-hmm.
you know, I got to know a group called the Ebonies.
Yeah.
One of my favorite groups from Camden. And it's a disc jockey called Gamble said it was a great group in Ohio that was really fantastic. So we flew to see them at a club, and we signed the OJs right on the
Wow.
And let me see, Hal Melvin and the Blue Notes, Hal and them grew up with Gamble in Philadelphia. He always knew Hal.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved the Blue Notes, even before they started recording records, because they had great performers. So we ended up signing the Blue Notes, which was a great sign. Billy Paul and Gamble grew up together in South Philly, so Gamble always knew Billy. Billy performed in a lot of the jazz clubs around Philadelphia, so we ended up eventually signing Billy. And I met the Three Degrees through Richard Barrett, who was a manager at that time, and I played on some of their earlier records, and eventually they ended up signing with Philly International, and that was a great sign.
And what? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, we're mostly hanging out, you know, people calling us, you know, and we used to have auditions, too.
It was kind of like American Idol in your own special way, wasn't it?
Yeah, every Saturday, me and Gamble used to... When we first started, we had auditions. The lines would be all down the hall.
What artist, when you first heard him, you just went whoa? I mean, who impressed you the most when you first had a chance to hear?
Oh, when I first started,
mm-hmm.
The Intruders from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Cowboys, the Girls.
I've heard about that.
Oh, when I heard that group sing, I just fell in love with their sound. And me and Gamble ended up signing them to Gamble Records, which later evolved into Philly International. But the Intruders was a great group to work with. But that's the group we first started out with.
The you can tell within 30 seconds if they have it or not, can't you?
Yeah, basically, that's how they used to do me, too, when I used to hustle my songs, you know. You can tell. You know, but you better be strong right from the beginning. So, yeah, we didn't waste no time with them, but, you know. But it was exciting, you know. It was, you know, every Saturday we look forward to it.
Tell me a little bit about Barbara Mason.
Barbara Mason, Gamble worked with Barbara Mason mainly as an artist. I played on some of her recordings, a couple of her albums as a musician. Well, Gamble is the one who worked with her on her performances because he's the one who's singing that bottle note on Yes, I'm Ready. Yes, I'm Ready. Doo, doo, doo. That's Gamble singing that other
note.
Wow.
So when
I basically played on her sessions.
And you played the piano, and gosh, it must have just been magic.
See, after New York changed, because I played sessions for Quincy Jones too, when I was communicating too, I had a chance to meet Quincy during that time, and that was wonderful. And when that changed, I started hanging out in Philadelphia. Philadelphia had a pretty active record thing going on during that time, and I ended up playing on a lot of record dates in Philly, Cameo Parkway, and a lot of other little independent record companies, and Barbara Mason was one of them.
Did you feel that as things developed that you were kind of had a friendly competition with Motown, Detroit?
Well, you know, people like to say that, but basically me and Gamble always say that they really inspired us, really. You know, we never really thought about really competing with them, but that was a company that we just was in awe of. We had a chance to go out there to visit their operation, and it was just a sight to see all those guys in that building just cranking out that kind of music. But we were mainly inspired by Motown with the Blueprint. When we went out there, they had a house full of talented geniuses. So we went back to Philadelphia and we did the same thing, you know. We grew to a point where we got our own studio and we bought a building, and we just signed a lot of great writers that developed into being some really great writers: Tommy Bell, Linda Creed, McFadden and Whitehead, Clifford Simmons and the Hawes, Dexter Wansell, and we had a very array of talented musicians that played on our productions. And I played piano on all the Gamble and Huff productions and some of McFadden and Whitehead's. You know, the record that I loved to play on with them when they were writing Wake Up Everybody for Hal Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Oh, yes.
Me and Gamble produced that, and that was one intro that was second to none. Was two pianos on that intro. It was me and Victor Kostoff, and I was playing the Yamaha Grand, and Victor was playing the Electric Wurlitzer.
That had to sound magnificent.
So, you know, and we just had a building full of talented people that cranked out those hits.
When did you decide that, how should I put it, that this job is just way too cool?
I'm sorry, say that again.
When did you decide that what you do, your job, is just way too cool?
Is way what?
Too cool. It's great.
What do you mean?
Well, when you're a musician and all of a sudden that one moment you're thinking, man, I can't believe I'm doing this for a living.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, Gamble always said, we always had jobs, you know. When me and Gamble first met, we used to write every day, but we had day jobs too, you know. And Gamble would always say that it would be a blessing if we could write songs every day and make a living at it. So that's what we strive for to do. So the better we got, and when we signed that label deal with Clive Davis, that's when the ball started swinging. Then we could, once me and Gamble could work could get up in the morning and go right to writing, that was a blessing.
Oh,
we got to that point.
I'll bet. Our guest tonight is Grammy Award-winning member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, creator of the, along with his partner Kenny Gamble, the creator of the Philly Soul Sound. We're going to take a short break and return with our conversation with Leon Huff. Folks, it's a great evening, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be back with Leon Huff in just a little bit. Fantastic conversation tonight as we go back into the sounds of the 60s and 70s. And basically, with his partner, Kenny Gamble, created the Philly Soul Sound. It's been phenomenal. Great conversation. We want to remind everyone that you can download this show, as well as all of our shows in the last 2.5 years, absolutely free of charge at blogtalkradio.com/Larry-Batson. Also, become a friend of the show, and if you are, they'll send you emails reminding you of our guests and our various broadcasts, and it's all at Blog Talk Radio. We want to also tell everyone that next week on the show, Laura Cheadle, and I was told, Leon, that her father, Papa Cheadle, I call him Papa Cheadle, had an opportunity to play with you years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, does that name ring a bell?
He's
a keyboard fella.
No.
Well,
what did he play?
He played the keyboards. He played piano and stuff.
No, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Well, that's quite all right, Leon. You've got quite a history to remember. So we all
yeah,
attempt,
you know.
Yeah, I understand completely. We also want to thank many of our underwriters, such as the Cobalt Blue Press Bookstore in historic Knightstown, Indiana. The shelves are stocked with new and rarely gently used books, including many hard-to-find children's titles. Contact Shannon Dawson. That's Shannon Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N, through Facebook or Twitter. The store is open 7 days a week, free coffee, Wi-Fi, and they've got a fantastic reading area. It's the Cobalt Blue Press Bookstore at the corner of Main and Jefferson in historic Knightstown, Indiana. Also, brand new underwriter Icebox, Grand Shelters. You can actually build an igloo, folks. They've created this fantastic tool. Let me tell you a little bit what goes on here. This would be an amazing Christmas gift for everybody. It's available at your local sporting goods stores. It's a tool where you actually build an igloo. Our good friend Igloo Ed goes back into the wilds of Rocky Mountain National Park, builds these igloos. Well, about this time of the year, and then they stay all winter, and he goes up there camping in them. He builds them the size that eight people can actually sleep in, so take advantage of that. I'll tell you what, just check out their website and have an opportunity to read more about it. It's at grandshelters.com. Also, iKids Fishing, new kids fishing show in the USA, starring kids, teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in Western New York. That website is www.wewanchu.com. It's one of America's finest fishing resorts. Also, Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call, 317-243-0700. Those are a few of the underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Legendary producer, songwriter, musician from Philadelphia, created the Philly Soul Sound. And Leon, that is a fantastic recording.
Okay. I enjoyed talking about
it. Tell us about that.
Say that again, Larry.
Tell us about the music that we just heard.
About the song you just heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, the group, group by Jutan. You know. Oh, okay. That's one of my favorite standard Christmas songs, and it sings it so warm and nice, you know. I saw that group at a talent display, and it really impressed me. And David Still and I, that's how I met the group, through David Still, and decided to do the Christmas music, and that's one of the songs that we did. It's really, 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 really sounds good.
Oh, it's magnificent. Did you...
It feels nice. Yeah.
Oh, did you tinkle the ivories for that song? Do you play piano?
Yes.
Oh, I could tell. You know, I play piano. I'm quite envious. That's just spectacular.
Well, you know, it's funny, Larry. You know, I got a story. Like, you know, I was born and raised in the house.
Mm-hmm.
In the same house, and my mother played piano for the church that I attended as a kid. So that's how that little big upright got to be in my house. So I had a story to say when my mother conceived me, that piano was sitting there waiting for me.
Oh,
so
my Lord.
I became really attracted to that piano at least about 5 or 6 years old.
Mm-hmm. And
I played that piano religiously.
I'll bet you did.
I mean, but I rocked and rolled during the week, but on Sundays, that was a no-no. My mother had me listening to some great gospel music on Sundays.
Oh, and, you know, there's nothing that sounds more spectacular than those upright pianos.
Well, I had one, boy, and I put a lot of love in that piano, and it gave me a lot of love back. Well, I remember playing that piano religiously. I mean, you know, that's how I got really good. By the time I was 10, 11 years old, I was playing for a neighborhood group, singing group.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really good. We was really winning all the neighborhood talent shows. And I was the piano player with five singers called
mm-hmm.
the Down of Flows. And we rocked, you know, and that was young. I was 13, 14. I was playing drums in elementary school. My
mm-hmm.
mother bought me a drum. And I played drums in elementary school, junior high school, marching bands. And playing the drums became very helpful in the studio working with drummers as a producer.
Sure.
So I was really into music really at an early age.
Well, it must break your heart when you hear about the schools taking music out of the curriculum.
That was disheartening because music is such a vital part of your existence. I mean, I couldn't understand that move at all. Because during the time I was growing up in Camden was alive with a great school music system. I mean, great bands. I mean, we took music lessons. We had great band teachers. I mean, it was a wonderful. My foundation in Camden was very active during the 50s. During my school years, I mean, that's all I did. You know, I participated in orchestra, the dance band, you know,
mm-hmm.
we played for the high school prom. You know, I played in the dance band, played drums. So music was everywhere for me when I was growing up.
When did you finally decide that music was a great way to meet girls?
when I was in that singing group, I was very popular in the neighborhood.
You were. I'll bet. You probably...
yeah, you know.
Yeah, I understand completely. So you probably still remember your music teachers from your school days.
Oh, definitely. Dr. Menicozzi, you know, in fact, we make contact every now and then. They gave me an award in the town Camden. They named the street after me in my neighborhood.
Oh, my Lord.
Leon Huff Way. And that was a thrill, a highlight in my career. And I haven't seen Dr. Menicozzi for a long time, but he showed up at the ceremony, and I was thrilled that happened.
That had to be.
Dr. Menicozzi was a great music teacher, great band leader, and I remember him all, you know.
Well,
he wasn't that far away because he was very serious. And, you know, the band was so talented. There's another member of that band who grew out to be a really great jazz bass player named Buster Williams.
Oh, yes.
Camden. Buster's from Camden, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we all went to school together. And Buster has stories about the Camden program, too. And he also experienced Dr. Menicozzi. So I remember Dr. Menicozzi real well. In fact, I'll never forget him.
He has to be proud to think that two of his students went on to do spectacular things in the music world.
Yeah, I often think about that. I think he is. You know, Mr. Menicozzi, I remember the bands very well. And during the spring, they had an event in Camden called the Spring Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And all the bands of the local schools got together and competed against each other. And of course, a school would get an award. But at the end of the ceremony, They had an all-star orchestra, and Mr. Menicozzi would pick the best musicians out from each school and form this all-star orchestra. Mm-hmm. I made that orchestra every year.
Oh, wow. I'll bet that was...
Great. It was wonderful. I'll never forget it.
Well, you know, they talk about how athletic teams, basketball and football, how much hard they work in practice. I don't think it even compares to what you were talking about, dance, band and music and all that. I mean, I know my young nephews, when they'd have rehearsal for the school band, they were up at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning working on their programs.
No question about it. I mean, you know, if you really, well, you know, I equate that to the way me and Gamble worked at our studio. We had a relentless work ethic, Larry. I mean, me and Gamble, we wrote and produced every day.
I mean, how did you
every day?
What was the formula when you got together and you created music? Was there a set standard when you did that?
Well, basically, you know, the more me and Gamble wrote together, I mean, the better we got. I mean, mm-hmm. Because that's basically applied to anything. You know, I mean, you want to get good at something, you got to work at it. So the more me and Gamble stayed in the studio and the more we met to collaborate, the better we got. And we always was critical of our creations. And you talk about rehearsal,
mm-hmm.
that we believed in rehearsal practice. I mean, me and Gamble were a rehearsal group to death. I mean, they'll know that song inside up, sideways before they go record it. And when they know the song like that, they'll give you a great performance because they know the song and they can give you some real emotions. But me and Gamble was really focused on our work ethic, and we was very hard on that.
Probably you could tell when the musicians basically didn't have to think when they played the song, that they just knew it so well that, like you said, it just brought out the emotions of each musician.
Oh, definitely. You know, especially with singers, too, I like to see singers. Me and Gamble would give the artists the lyrics and a take with them, let them live with it for about a couple of weeks, because I want you all, however long it takes you, to get that song in your head, because when you come back and do the overdubs for the vocals, I don't want you reading. I want you to sing the song. I don't want you to read it.
Wow.
And if you're going to give me your true emotions, you're going to give me your real emotions on some of them songs, you're going to have to close your eyes.
Yes.
You're going to have to feel out emotions, because you can't do all that when you be reading. So I didn't allow that.
Yeah, they have to go into the zone.
Definitely.
Yes. Well, I'm very excited tonight because we do have listeners around the world, and you have a brand new single that I was lucky enough to hear and your management sent to me. It's called Groovy People. Tell us a little bit about it before we have a chance for this worldwide audience to hear it.
Well, first of all, it's a great dance, good dance. You know, the Gamble and I, we are in the Dance Music Hall of Fame, too. So I love up-tempo music. Mm-hmm. You know, the original song was written and produced by Gamble and Huff or Lou Rawls. You can remember back one of his early albums.
Mm-hmm.
And Lou Rawls was my favorite artist. So with the track was swinging so good, I said, I'm going to do an instrumental of that song.
Oh,
I went to the studio and got together with musicians and came up with that instrumental. And David Still, you know, he heard it and he flipped out over it and thought that I should put it out as a single or as part of an album, Groovy People.
Well, that was excellent advice because it's phenomenal. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World, and we'd like to play for everyone around the world. New single by our guest tonight, Leon Huff, Groovy People. That is absolutely fantastic. Gosh, what a great track.
Oh, that swings, Larry. It swings.
Oh, it does. I mean, it sounds great today. It could have been released in the 70s, and it would have just been just as fantastic. Man.
I assume
you played on that as well?
Oh, yeah. I had a ball playing that. That was really great. Really fun. You know, it was a fun session.
How long does it take you to put a, you know, we talked about the rehearsal. Now you guys make sure how long did it take to put a single together? Was it like a day thing or a couple days or?
Yeah. Basically, you know, we'll go in and we're during the time that Phil International was really in the heyday. You know, we would be in the studio every day, every morning at 10 o'clock.
Oh,
and that's when session start. I don't care how late you hung out, you better be there tomorrow, next day at 10 o'clock. And it feel like playing, and usually take a day, you know, to cut a really good rhythm track. You know, if on a good day, a great day, we might cut two tracks in one day. But that's a day's work.
Well, you know, what's also remarkable, we didn't even get into this, but in 76, you co-produced with your partner the first two post-Motown albums by the Jacksons.
On the Jacksons, that's another highlight. Meeting Michael and his brothers, Marlon, Tito, and Jackie. I mean, they were great. I mean, just meeting Michael was a thrill. I mean, he was so great, and they were really great to work with. And when they came to Philadelphia, they were, you know, they recorded different when they were at Motown because the session would be over at 10 o'clock. That was their deadline. They couldn't work beyond 10 o'clock. But when they came to Philadelphia, their whole work ethic changed, and they loved it because sometimes we're just getting started at 10 o'clock at night. doing something in the studio down in Philly. We had a whole different approach to how long we're going to stay in the studio. So Michael and his brothers loved it when we used to stay in the studio all night. So when he came to Philadelphia, their whole work ethic changed, and they really loved it. And Michael would be in the studio from the beginning to the end.
He was a workaholic, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And he was such a talent to work with. And he knew his voice. And me and Gamma used to be in awe watching Michael put his voice on them tracks. I mean, Michael could really sing, you know. Michael was. I mean, if you knew Michael's history and his story, you know, Michael was singing very well at 9 years old. I mean, in his story, I mean, Michael sang "Climb Every Mountain." I mean, like an adult. I mean, Michael was an amazing singer, even at that age when he saw. When he sang "I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus" at 9 years old, and I mean,
nailed it. Well, he had a
tremendous. So I go way back with Michael as a singer. I mean, Michael was a for real singer, and it was just a matter of time for him to grow to those heights that he did. And I'm just thankful that I had an opportunity to be a part of his story.
Well, you had to think when you were sitting there listening to the tape. What did he insist on doing? I assume he was a perfectionist.
Was a professional?
Well, he's a perfectionist. I assume he would have to do take after take. Is that correct?
No, Michael wasn't. No, he didn't do a lot of takes. But Michael developed a technique in Philly called stacking your voice. Michael could do things with his voice. Well, Gamble had a lot to do with the remix and him and Joe Tarsha. They mixed the records, and they were doing. I'll be in there watching the overdub. My main participation was those tracks as a musician. That was my main focus. That music, those tracks, was exactly the way me and Gamble wanted it. And Gamble was basically the person who put the voices on and did the mixing. But I would watch Michael, and he knew exactly how he wanted to sound, and he knew exactly what to do with those tracks, even with the harmony with his brothers. I mean, Michael knew his way around the studio, and I was surprised that he did. But he watched me and Gamble, from the beginning to the end. He would be in there while we cutting the tracks,
mm-hmm.
watching. Michael was just watching, and he said in a book that I think Michael was like 7 pages. He talked about his experience in Philadelphia, and he said he learned a lot with gambling off.
I'll bet. Well, you guys were.
That was, so, you know, and, you know, after us, you know, I mean, Quincy Jones took him to the heights where he belonged.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, I mean, he's working with 2 geniuses there.
Oh, yeah, Michael had a ball with us. I mean, it was really fun, you know. I mean, you know, it was really exciting, too, you know, because once Michael's fans found out that Michael Jackson was in our building,
mm-hmm.
they camped outside our building all night long just to get a glimpse of him. I mean, it was really something, you know.
I'll bet. Well,
I mean, they actually slept outside our building.
Wow.
Waiting for Michael to come out. I mean, Michael we might come out the studio like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, we had to get the cops to make sure things didn't get out of control. But I mean, they really was excited to see Michael.
I'll bet.
And once they found out that Michael was in Philadelphia in our building, that's where they came.
Wow. Well, Leon, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show tonight. I hate to put you on the spot, but when that new album comes out, I'd love you to have to join us once again, because we didn't even talk about Archie Bell and the Drells. We didn't get into them. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, all that dance music. Yeah,
oh,
sure. It'll be a pleasure.
Oh, it would be fantastic. I hope you have a wonderful holiday. Are you Santa Claus?
Well, no, my kids are grown. You know, I got grandkids. You know, but I'm Santa Claus in a lot of other different ways. You know, I enjoy the holidays, and you have a great holiday yourself.
Oh well, thank you, Dr. Day. What a wonderful
thank
show tonight.
We have just spent an hour with music royalty.
We have. We're not worthy. And we wish the best to you and your family, Mr. Huff. It was an absolute pleasure. And I know our listeners around the world enjoyed every moment, because I thoroughly did. I was in musical heaven. We'd like to thank Melissa Hovey and, of course, Wayne Larson and Jim Johnson. Didn't he do a great job on the music mix, Mr. Huff?
Yes, he did.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. He'll be so glad to hear those words from you. Folks, next week on the show, Laura Cheadle will be with us. We're going to have a Cheadle Christmas. Have a great week, everybody. Gosh, this is Larry Batson, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.